Well, last week you may remember that we continued looking at the words of Christ as it related to the subject of lust and how it leads to adultery in the mind of the one who allows themselves to lust. You remember, I trust, that the Bible is clear that there are consequences for adultery, not just the physical act of adultery, but even the mental act of adultery. And so it's something that every one of us need to steer clear of. It is something that every one of us need to try to avoid. And last week, as we continued looking at the words of Christ and what he said to do in order to address those things that would cause us problems, he said, if it's the right eye, pluck it out. If it's the right hand, cut it off. Essentially, what Christ was saying was this: do whatever it takes to remove yourself from the temptations that would cause you to lust. So today, we would not necessarily say pluck out the eye or cut off the hand, but we would say something like this: if you can't handle the internet, get rid of the internet. If you can't handle cable, get rid of cable. If you can't handle a magazine that promotes sexuality in other parts of the magazine, get rid of the magazine. If you can't handle the books, get rid of the books. Whatever it may be, if it is a stumbling block to us, if it is something that causes our heart and our mind to go places it doesn't need to go by way of lust, we need to get rid of it. We need to cut it off, because there are eternal ramifications to it if we don't. I said last week, and I want to say again, if a person is comfortable and content to lust in their heart, whether they ever perform the physical act or not, if they are content to commit the act of lust in their heart, which is adultery in the mind of God, you really do have to question the person's salvation. Because adultery and lust should be so repulsive to us that we would want absolutely nothing to do with it, whatever it cost us, whatever was required. All right? Excuse me. So that was last week, obviously, and tonight we're moving on. I want to ask you, how many of you have heard a scenario like this? Someone is in the house, and they have the microwave going, and at the same time the microwave is going, someone decides to turn on another small appliance, and as a result of both things operating at the same time, the breaker flips. You ever heard of something like that happening? The microwave and maybe a hairdryer, the microwave, maybe a toaster, the microwave, whatever it may be. A couple of appliances are going at the same time and the breaker flips because of it. How many of us have ever borrowed a piece of machinery from someone, and before it was entrusted to us, a whole set of special instructions had to be given to us about that piece of machinery? Probably happened to some of us. I know it's happened to me. It sounds something like this. Now listen, when you go to try to start it, here's what you've got to do. You want to make sure that this is done, and you want to make sure that you're holding this just right, and then if you're standing at a 45 degree angle facing the east, then you want to pull just right, and then if you want to turn it off, you got to be sure and do this and watch out for this and take care of this, because if you don't, this will come back and bite you and it'll burn you or something like that. Have you ever borrowed equipment like that? How many of you have ever loaned out equipment like that, Jim? Oh, yeah. Yes, Jim. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Jim's got some great equipment, but some of it has got some tricks attached to it, and you've got to be very careful or you can hurt yourself with it. There is that equipment out there. Now, if you think about it for just a moment, you understand this to be true, that if a house cannot run two small appliances on the same circuit, there is a bigger problem in place. I mean, if this is so and this is so and it causes this, then there's a bigger problem in place. If you're going to borrow a piece of equipment or you're going to loan a piece of equipment to someone and there are all these special rules in place, I mean, really, it shouldn't take much for you to realize something isn't exactly right here. That there are bigger problems in place than just this one little issue or this one particular issue. And so we understand that sometimes the little things really are indications of bigger problems that are in place. They just haven't been dealt with. Now tonight I want us to be reminded of what Christ said in verse number 33. This was a message that was preached 6 weeks ago. Verse number 33, it says, "Again ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths." You may remember that the message focused on this idea, and it focused on this thought, that the disciples in Christ were living in such a day, they were living in a culture where the mentality of so many was this, was that it was okay to lie and it was okay to mislead people, and you were not really necessarily required to follow through with your promises, to follow through with your commitments. The only time that you were really expected to tell the truth was when you were under some kind of a legal oath or when you had made a promise or a vow to the Lord. The idea was this: you don't want to commit perjury because that would be a terrible thing, and you certainly don't want to lie to God because how terrible would that be? And yet, to lie to anyone else about anything else, that was no problem for them. And I said then, unfortunately, we live in a similar culture and a similar society these days. We live in a day today where people really only tell the truth in so many situations if they're afraid there is some kind of a legal consequence or legal ramification to them not telling the truth. But if they look at you in the eye and they lie to you, they don't think anything about it. If they look at you and they just tell you something that absolutely is not true, it doesn't bother them. And we are a nation who is falling apart in many ways, but one in particular is this. There is a, I don't know the right way to say this necessarily, but we're almost at a crisis level because of a lack of integrity and a lack of honesty. I mean, it is truly a portion of those things that are contributing to the destruction of our society, that there is no honesty, there is no integrity, there is this no compulsion within a person to just be honest and to just tell the truth and to just be a person of their word. And so tonight we're going to look at the rest of the words of Christ, and I know that some people may say, Brother Kyle, we've heard this before, and Brother Kyle, you've even preached this several times before, and I understand. If I thought it had been cured in the last 6 weeks, I wouldn't touch it. You understand what I mean? If I hadn't been lied to in the last 6 weeks, I'd say, you know what, we probably don't need this message. But I've been lied to in the last 6 weeks. You've been lied to in the last 6 weeks. And some in this room have been a part of the lies that have been propagated in the last 6 weeks. Well, I didn't get a very good response, but it doesn't change the fact. I mean, listen, there are those even in churches. Now get this, there are those even in churches who feel no guilt in telling lies. They feel no guilt in saying things and then not following through with their word. It's not just those churches. It would even be among our own ranks, and it would even be in our own church. So notice what it says in verse number 34. Christ, obviously speaking to the disciples, says this, "But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black." Now, what is Christ doing? Christ is addressing a problem present in their society, that there was such a credibility gap, that there was such a crisis by way of honesty and integrity, that he knew what was taking place in their day, just as we would know what takes place in our day. But what would happen back then was this: if a person wasn't under oath, if they were not going into a legal setting where they needed to make sure they told the truth to keep themselves out of legal problems, if it wasn't going to be an oath that was made to the Lord, here's what they would do many times to try to prove the seriousness of their intent to follow through with their promise or to follow through with their vow. They would do something like this. They would swear by the heavens. Or they might swear by the earth. They might swear by Jerusalem, or they might even swear by their own head. Now, again, we do things differently these days, but what was supposed to happen back in their day and in their culture and their time was this, is if somebody promised or swore and they invoked heaven as a witness against them, then somehow that was supposed to carry a lot of weight. Well, I'm not going to lie to you now because I have invoked the heavens as a witness to the promise I'm making you, as if I would never lie with the heavens as a witness. Well, I'm telling you the truth. I swear to you, I mean, according to the earth, I'm telling you the truth. Wow. You called upon the earth as a witness. Because, I mean, the earth really speaks up a lot of times, does it not? And really accuses those who have lied. And so it was supposed to give some kind of seriousness to the vow. Someone might say, well, I swear by Jerusalem. Or one might swear by their head and say, by my own head, I swear. And today we do things completely different, do we not? You've heard me mention this before. I know that this isn't anything new. But, I mean, how did the phrase ever get popular? I swear on my mother's grave. Where did that come from other than some effort of someone trying to prove how serious they were about the promise they were making? As if they would not lie on that particular parcel of land. Now, if you get me off of this little rectangle area, you better watch me. I probably won't do what I say. But so long as I make a promise on my mother's grave, you can rest for sure that I am going to do what I tell you. Yeah, as if dead mama's going to rise up and say, you told him. There's no seriousness to it. I understand the idea. I understand the principle of someone placing their hand on the Bible and saying, I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. I understand that, but the truth of it is this. If someone is a liar, they don't have a problem lying with their hand on a Bible. It doesn't mean anything to them. It's just another way to try to, you know, to make the person think that they are serious about the oath. But see, in our mind, well, if they put their hand on the Bible, they must be serious. No, if they're a liar, they're a liar. And you've heard me talk about before, children. Why did children ever have to say, cross my heart and hope to die? Sticking needles in their eyes. Has a child ever stuck 1,000 needles in their eyes to prove how serious they were? No. If they were really serious and they amped it up, as I've said before, to 1,000,000 needles, have we ever seen a child try to collect 1,000,000 needles to prove the seriousness of their promise? No, but what are they trying to do? To their friend or to whoever it is they are dealing with, they are trying to prove this is how serious it is, that if I lie, I am willing to stick 1,000 needles in my eyes, cross my heart, and hope to die. Liar. But you understand this? I mean, in our day, however far back we want to go, in our own day, what have people tried to do? They have tried to find ways to prove to other people just how serious they are with their word and with their promise. The only problem is this, there still continues to be a lack of integrity in the lives of many people. And so here is Christ speaking to the disciples, and he says, but I say unto you, swear not at all. Listen, men, you don't need to make any kind of a promise. You don't need to make any kind of a vow, because he goes on to say, you don't want to swear by heaven. Why? For it is God's throne. Listen to this. The heavens that you would invoke as a witness according to this vow or in relation to this promise that is being made. He said, listen, you got to remember that heaven is a part of God's throne. And you've got to remember that earth is his footstool and Jerusalem. It is the city of the great king. Listen, Jerusalem is the city of God. And he says, in that whole using your head thing, neither shalt thou swear by thy head. Why? Because thou canst not make one hair white or black naturally. You can do it in a bottle. But naturally, you have no control even as to what color hair pops out of your head. God and God alone determines the color of your hair. So what is he saying? He is saying this: if you call upon the heavens as a witness, I want you to know you're still invoking me in this. If you call upon the earth, I want you to know you are still calling upon me as a witness. And if you use Jerusalem, I want you to know that that is my city. And as it relates to your head, I want you to understand that not even your head is your control and under your authority. No, it is I who determines the color of one's hair. So whatever you use to try to prove the seriousness of the vow you are making, just know I am a witness to every bit of it. I see the promise. I hear the promise. I hear the vow. I hear everything that you're doing. And so I don't care what you use in an effort to prove how serious you are at this moment. You're still calling me as a witness upon the covenant or the pact that's being made. So in verse number 37, he says this: but let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. Now we know this, don't we? We know exactly what this means, don't we? He is saying, disciples, followers of Christ, pupils of Christ, listen, when it comes to your communication, when it comes to your manner of life, this is how it's supposed to be. Yea means yea, nay means nay, and when you say yea here, everyone needs to know that you mean yea without heaven, without earth, without Jerusalem, or without your head. And if you say nay, that they know nay means whether it be by heaven, earth, Jerusalem, or with or without your head. Disciples, just do what you say you're going to do. As I said 6 weeks ago, if you tell someone you're going to do something, do it. I mean, what does that really mean? It means just what we think it means. If you tell someone, I am going to do this, then you do it. If you say to someone, I will be there. Beware. Anywhere. Well, it's not a really big deal if I don't show up. Did you tell them you'd be there? Well, yes. Okay. Then guess what? It's a big deal if you're there, and it's a big deal if you're not there. Why? Because your word is associated with your character or your integrity. If you tell someone, I will pay you, guess what that means? You need to pay them without them seeking you out to try to collect payment. Amen. This isn't overly complicated, is it? If you tell someone you're going to do something, they ought to be able to say they're going to do it. They ought to be able to know they're going to do it. Why? Because in their mind, it ought to be that they assume of you that your word is so important to you that you would do whatever it takes to honor your word. But see, that's not the world we live in today, just as it isn't the world that Christ was living in their day. So again, what do we have? We have situations like this. Well, I told them I was going to do something, but it'll be all right if I don't. According to who? Hello? It's going to be fine if I don't do it. Well, it may be fine to you if you don't do it, but the person who is counting on you to do what you said you would do, that is a big deal to them. Somebody says, well, it's not a big deal if I don't show up or if I don't follow through and I'm not there. Well, it may not be a big deal to you, but stop and consider it from the perspective of another person. That is a big deal to them. Why? Because they assume that your word means something. If you tell somebody you're going to pay them, I'll get with them later. How do you know they don't need the money that you owe them? Well, I need it worse than they do. Well, really, that's irrelevant. I mean, this past week I had to pay my house payment and the interest all in one check. Can I just be very honest with you? This wasn't a good month for that. This would have been a fantastic month for the man holding the note on my house to say, don't worry about it. But you know what? He didn't volunteer it. Therefore, I don't have the right to not do it. It is my obligation, and I went in 2 days before it was due. Why? Because payment was due today on Sunday. So I knew if I pay it tomorrow, technically I'm fine. But the verbal agreement was this: I'll pay you by the first of every month. How important is my word to me? It is important enough to know that while this is a tight month and while there are some bills that I don't necessarily want to pay this month, guess what? I made a promise 5 years ago that I would pay my mortgage by the first of the month every month. And this month, even though it wasn't easy, I had to say, okay, I made the promise. I made the vow. It's time to do it. But did you invoke heaven? Well, it doesn't matter if I invoked heaven or not. Pay your bills. Show up when you're supposed to show up. Do what you said you're going to do. Just be honest. He says there in verse number 34, but I say unto you, swear not at all. Now, I know that sometimes we'll still hear a statement like this: I swear, man, I'm going to. Right? Oh, I swear, I promise. I've never had anybody say, according to the heavens or according to the earth or according to Jerusalem, I've never had that said to me. But I've had this said to me: Hey, man, I promise. You know what they're doing? Oh, I'm serious this time. Now, you know those last 38 times? No, not so much, because I never said I promise. But this time, no, I mean it. I'm serious this time. I promise. No, I swear, man, I swear. You can count on me this time. Well, notice some words that I've never really given attention to until this week, and I don't know if you've ever given them a lot of attention. But notice what it says in verse number 37. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatever is more than these cometh of evil. Whatever is more than these cometh of evil. What does it mean whenever Christ says that whatever cometh, whatever is more than these cometh of evil? What does it mean? He is basically saying this: that if a person has to swear or if a person has to vow that what they are saying is true, that what they are saying is accurate, or that they will follow through with what they say they will do, if that has to be in place, then you know what it's indicating? Something's not right here. Something is not as it should be. Does that make sense? It's kind of like if somebody says, hey, listen, I'm about to start the microwave, so can you turn the hairdryer off? You know something's not right here. Okay? If somebody were to say to you, now listen, you can borrow this, but just be advised, this is how you've got to start it, or this is how you've got to turn it off, or be careful, and the little light goes on and says, you know, I think something's not right here. If a person has to say to you, I promise, then you know what that indicates? Something's not right here. Because anything greater or more than a yes or a no is something that comes or arises from that which is evil. You following this? If I have to tell people, I promise, something's not right. Now, see, I got to thinking about this. Over the course of my life, like over the course of your life, I've come into contact with many new people. Right? Okay, so as I come into contact with new people, what do they probably assume of me by way of my word and my integrity and my measure of honesty? Well, they probably assume that I'm like everyone else. That I'm not a man of honesty, I'm not a man of integrity, I'm not a man of character. Now follow this. This is so very important. Because people may not know me, and as a result, may not know if they can trust me, I may have to strive harder to prove their trust or to prove their confidence. And you've had to win the trust and confidence of people in your life. Because they don't know you, and they've dealt with liars so many times from so many different areas of life that there is just an assumption that you're probably just like everyone else. And so there is this idea that, well, you know, I don't know if I can really trust them. I don't really know them. I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt. But, I mean, most people don't really do what they say or follow through with what they say they're going to do, whatever it may be. And so I don't know if I can trust them. Now, listen, there may be times that we have to prove ourselves to people. But even in that, we don't have to get stupid crazy in trying to do it. You understand this, don't you? That if I meet someone and I say, okay, listen, this is what we're going to do, I don't have to start saying, listen, I promise you, man, I swear you can count on me. I just want you to know that I'm a man of my word and I've got references and you can check it out. No, I don't need to get crazy with all that, but I can look them in the eye. I can shake their hand firmly and tell them, listen, this is what I'm going to do, and then do it. I mean, after all, isn't that the way it's supposed to be? My yea is yea and my nay is nay. What I tell you I'm going to do, that is what I'm going to do. If I have to do anything more than that to prove myself, something is wrong with me. It's not them. It's not the culture that we're a part of. It's not somebody else's fault. No, if I am not a person of my word and people cannot trust me, that is not their fault, that is my fault. So here are some things to think about. If your spouse cannot trust you when you tell them you will do something or be somewhere or whatever it may be, unless they get a good, firm, solid commitment, vow, promise, something from you, you've got credibility problems. I mean, if anyone should be able to trust us, should it not be our spouse? Honey, I'll take care of that. Do you promise? Why would my spouse, why would my wife have to say, do you promise? It would only mean that I've let her down enough that she wonders if I'll actually follow through. I'll be there for that event. You promise? Don't let me down again, because the last time you said that, you didn't follow through, and the kids were very disappointed. How dare us, as a spouse or as a parent, not follow through with what we've said we're going to do? Listen, if our children can't trust us to follow through with our own commitments, there's something wrong with us. For us to have to look our children in the eye and swear to them, there is something seriously wrong with us. I promise you, son, Dad won't let you down like I did all the other times. Because I'm really serious this time. Can I just remind us that if our children don't trust us, us throwing in the old I promise doesn't mean a whole lot to them? See, anything greater than or more than our yea being yea or our nay being nay, friends, there's something wrong with that. That just isn't right for the life of a Christian to have to go start swearing by this or promising by this and whatever it may involve. If your family can't trust you, because let's be honest, some of you got family that you don't trust, right? Yeah, I don't care what they can stick a million needles in their eye because I don't trust them. Hey, listen, that street runs both directions. Your family ought to be able to trust you whether they're liars or not. They ought to be able to say, hey, listen, I may have lied to him or I may have lied to her, but one thing I know for sure is they're not going to return the favor and lie to me. And listen, if they cannot trust you to follow through with what you say you're going to do, there are problems. If the people you have worked with for years still don't trust you without some lavish promise on your behalf, you got problems. Boy, this is terrible. If your church family can't trust you without some lavish promise on your part, listen, there are problems with your integrity. I mean, can you imagine if I had to say to you all the time, oh, I promise this time. I promise you this time I'll show up to church. Brother Kyle, just start doing what you say and stop with all the promises. Okay, you said you were going to, but now you're throwing in the old proverbial promise. See, there's something wrong with that. If I have to promise to you after all these years, see, we're not in this introductory stage where I'm trying to prove myself. No, it ought to be after 14 years, you'd know that I do what I say I'm going to do, and if something hinders me from doing it, that I communicate with you and that I don't make up stories and lie about why I didn't do what I said I was going to do. I am amazed at, I've said this before, I don't mean to be repetitive, but I am amazed at the number of people who think I'm stupid. Just be honest. Wait, why did that even come out of my mouth? We're talking about you lying to me. Just own up to your lie. And just say, hey, listen, it wasn't my dog's fault, it wasn't my car's fault, it wasn't, and whatever. Just fess up and say, I'm a liar. Well, that requires too much honesty. If your church family can't trust you, if you have to promise and swear and vow, there's something wrong. See, if it's a new relationship and I've got to establish myself and prove myself to them, that's one thing. But even at that, I don't have to be crazy in the way that I do it. But friends, once we're established and once we have a relationship in place, everyone who knows us, no matter what the relationship is, if it's a family, if it's a church relationship, if it's a work relationship, whatever it is, everyone who knows us ought to say this of us. If nothing else, I will say of that person, they are honest. Of everything I know of this individual, I can say this, that they do what they say they're going to do. They follow through. They don't just say whatever you want to hear and then do whatever they want to do. No, I know this person. I've worked with them for the last 10 years. I've served beside them for the last however many years. I have known that person, you know, ever since they married into the family, and here is what I know of them. If anything is true of them, they are honest. It's what it should be, should it not, for the child of God? So the question we ought to consider tonight is this. How many times do we have to prove ourselves? And how many times do we find ourselves having to vow and swear or promise that we're good for it this time? Because see, if you and I are still in the process of having to promise and to vow and to truly be serious this time, you know what it says of us? There's something bad wrong. There's something terribly wrong with your level of integrity. I said a moment ago, I'm just going to say it again real quick and then we'll be done, but I've been lied to by church members. And it's so disappointing. And I wouldn't preach this message probably as fervently maybe tonight, or maybe I wouldn't touch on the subject as much as I have in recent weeks. But I mean, goodness, when you get lied to by church members and there's no sense of guilt at all from the one who has done the lying, I mean, it kind of makes you say, okay, when do we grow up and become the Christians we're supposed to be and just be honest men and women? Somebody may say, well, at least I haven't lied to the preacher lately. I'm not just worried about whether or not you lie to me. Have you lied to anyone else in this room lately? Not followed through with your word. Not followed through with your commitment. Not followed through with what you said you were going to do. What kind of integrity do we have? Have you lied to people at work lately? Because it got you out of a bind, because it helped your cause, because it helped your agenda. Have you lied to them? What's going on? Friends, I want to remind us, the yea should be yea, the nay should be nay. And if we're not going to be honest, how dare us expect anyone else to be honest with us? I can't stand them. They lied, usually said the liar. Hey, listen, if we're not a person of character, if we're not a person of integrity, let's not expect or demand anyone else to be. Christians ought to be honest. End of discussion. Let's all stand tonight and bow our heads for a word of prayer. Father, as I come to you this evening, I do pray that you'd help us to be men and women of integrity. Lord, it is true that we live, it seems.